Now I invite you to stand for the reading of the gospel. It is Mark, the fifth chapter, verses 21 through 43. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the sea. Then one of the leaders of the synagogue, named Jairus, came, and when he saw him, fell at his feet and begged him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." So he went with them. And a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. For she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that the power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. How can you say who touched me?" He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." And while he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the leader of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." He allowed no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he entered the house, he said to them, "Why do you make a commotion and weep? The child is not dead, she's sleeping." They laughed at him. And then he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Little girl, get up." And immediately the girl got up and began to walk about. She was almost 12 years old. At this, they were overcome with amazement. And he strictly ordered them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, there are so many things about the book of Daniel that we just don't understand. There are so many questions. For example, why is the first half of the book written in Hebrew and the second half in Aramaic? And more importantly than that is, when was it written? Historians tell us that some of the events that are recorded within the pages of that story actually took place over the span of three dynasties. That means that there could be several hundred years included in the book. One person living several hundred years? It's kind of doubtful, isn't it? Is it any wonder that scholars insist that there is little, if any, evidence that a man named Daniel ever lived? And if he was never an actual person, why was the book allowed to become part of our canon? Part of God's holy word. Now, if these discrepancies and questions bother you, well, rest assured that you're in very good company. It's one of those things that most of us just would rather not discuss. I grew up singing about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace of doom.
I like that song a whole lot.
And I think I was probably in second grade when my father had to come and retrieve me from Sunday school because the teacher just didn't approve that I was insisting that even as a girl, I should be allowed to portray Daniel as he marched bravely into that den with all those hungry lions. So if the stories weren't true, if they never really happened, then what was the point of telling them? What was the point of encouraging people to be like Daniel? Well, if you've ever read the story, isn't there a part of you that really wished you could be like Daniel? I mean, real or not, he was so brave and faithful. He was so compassionate and loving. I mean, even when the king threw him in among the hungry lions, Daniel said, "O king, live forever." I mean, haven't you ever wished that you could be like that? Well, friends, that's the point. Maybe the truth is that until the birth of Jesus, no one person was ever able to be that good. But was it a bad thing to want to encourage people to reach for a high goal? Was it wrong in a time of so much conflict and misunderstandings and violence to show people that there was a different way, that there was God's way? Maybe the people needed encouragement. And maybe we do too. If we read the story of Daniel and we find ourselves wanting to be like him, wanting to face whatever difficulty comes our way with clear understanding that God will always be present, will protect and watch over us, if we really want to behave as though we believe that God will save us from whatever evil that happens to be threatening us at the moment, well, then doesn't Daniel become a good thing? Isn't his example there to show us the way? You know, the character of Daniel was an amazing man. Because even in the face of death, his faith was unwavering. But when we read the story, what we learn is that his faith wasn't built on self-determination and goal. Daniel worked hard at developing that faith. He didn't just spend time on his knees every day praying to God, although he did that and it was very important to him. He knew that if there was nothing else to balance that prayer, then pretty soon it would become nothing more than a laundry list of his wishes and his desires. And so Daniel spent a great deal of his time studying the word, learning. He knew God's laws and he tried to obey all of the commandments. You see, the faith that Daniel had, it was an all-the-time faith. Everything he did, everything he said, was filtered through his understanding of God's truth. And so, yes, he had his quiet set aside time with God. But when he got up and he left, he took God with him. Daniel, he was not only able to pray for all the right things, he knew when he had the right answer. And it wasn't always the answer he wanted or the answer that he expected. And how did he know he had the answer? Well, remember, he spent his day walking with God. He developed a relationship with God. He knew God's heart. And so he was able to discern what he was supposed to do, how he was supposed to behave. And he knew when God had answered his prayer. Another thing that Daniel did when it came to matters of faith was, in James W. Moore's words, he knew that knowing and going were two different things. He took God with him. He lived God into reality. Even when he was thrown into the lion's den, in place of focusing on how unfair the situation was, he turned his attention to God, a God whose presence and power and promises he never doubted. And it was that unwavering faith of his. It was his ability to stand in the midst of an angry crowd and remain truthful to what he knew was from God. It was his ability to reach out and to forgive even the vilest of people that caused others to want to be around him. Have you ever noticed that there are just certain people, certain leaders that people flow towards? Why? Why is that? It is because they are strong in their convictions and they are sure of the path that God has set before them. You know, that's why the multitudes gathered around Jesus. The woman in today's gospel, she ignored all the laws and she risked even her own life just for the opportunity to be close enough to Jesus that she could reach out and touch him. She didn't think he was magical. She had heard about him. Maybe she had even watched him. And she knew that beyond a shadow of a doubt, that he was from God. And so she risked everything to be in the presence of the holy. Friends, when people look at us, when they see how we live and how we speak to each other, when they observe how we react when we're wrongly accused and attacked for our convictions, are they drawn to us? Or are they repelled from us? Do we build others up so that they can feel God's grace in their lives? Or do we assume a self-righteousness that allows us to tear them down or simply ignore them? when all is said and done. The mark of a true Christian is when we extend God to others, when we give and forgive in His holy name. And this ability does not come through self-determination, but through study, through prayer, and self-sacrifice. May God's amazing grace flow from each of you so others may come to know Him too. To God be the glory. And all God's children say, Amen. Amen.